Psalm 140. I initially planned on going to Psalm 123, and the week got past me, and then I was going to do something else, and then right after I had kind of gotten over a little bit of what some things were happening in our state government, we had a nice text today and got me all stirred back up. And so I thought that I would do this, that I'm going to do tonight. It's something that I've never done in my whole ministry. And that is, I want to speak on how to pray against the wicked. And now I will say this. This is not a whole theology of how to do this. It actually just came to pass in my devotional reading. I'm starting over with everything, and I was reading through the Psalms, and I started in the middle, and I went to the end, and then I'll go back and start at the beginning and go, or I might go to the middle and go backwards. But anyway, just for a little variation. And so I saw this, and the Lord ministered to me a little out of it, so I thought I would give it here to us tonight. Psalm 140. Rescue me, O Lord, from evil men. Preserve me from violent men who devise evil things in their hearts. They continually stir up wars. They sharpen their tongues as a serpent. Poison of a viper is under their lips. Selah. Keep me, O Lord, from the hands of the wicked. Preserve me from violent men who have purposed to trip up my feet. The proud have hidden a trap for me and cords. They have spread a net by the wayside. They have set snares for me. Selah. I said to the Lord, You are my God. Give ear, O Lord, to the voice of my supplications. O God, the Lord, the strength of my salvation, you have covered my head in the day of battle. Do not grant, O Lord, the desires of the wicked. Do not promote his evil device, that they may not be exalted. Selah. As for the head of those who surround me, may the mischief of their lips cover them. May burning coals fall upon them. May they be cast into the fire, into deep pits from which they cannot rise. May a slanderer not be established in the earth. May evil hunt the violent man speedily. I know that the Lord will maintain the cause of the afflicted. And justice for the poor. Surely the righteous will give thanks to your name. The upright shall dwell in your presence. And like I said, I'm not really looking at giving an exposition of the whole psalm, just bringing out some of the points here. Because David is really praying against wicked people, isn't he? And he's praying not only for his own preservation, but he's praying for the Lord to actually act on his behalf against wicked people. Now, I do want to say that the psalm is just not talking about wicked people in general. Okay? Lost people are characterized by wickedness, and lost people have varying degrees of wickedness in their life. But these are settled, wicked people. Right. This is, they're after him. They're using their speech against him. They've set snares for him. In other words, what they're doing on what? Purpose. They're doing it on purpose. Okay. And of course, we do understand that at the end of the day, all wicked people, right, are going to end up in the lake of fire and brimstone at that awful great white throne judgment. But here we're talking about people who are settled in their wickedness. And so David is praying against these settled as it were, wicked people. Now, he has several prayers, requests to the Lord against them. And it begins in verse 8, where it says, "Do not grant, O Lord, the desires of the wicked. Do not promote his evil device, that they may not be exalted." So the first thing here that David asked is that the Lord would not fulfill or allow to come to pass, right, the desires, the aims, the purposes of wicked people. Now, I think we need to understand, brethren, that we understand that God is sovereign, is he not? Now, God does no wickedness. He can't be tempted with wickedness. He doesn't tempt his people with wickedness. God cannot do wickedness, right? Amen? Okay? But God cannot intervene. In other words, if God doesn't restrict and restrain wickedness, what happens? It just flourishes, right? Okay, the very fact that you and I can meet here unhindered is an act of God's restraint on people's hearts and lives. Okay. And so, is it fitting that David would actually ask the Lord to not allow the desires of the wicked to prosper? It's an entirely appropriate request, is it not? And of course, the wicked, they do have desires, and so he says, don't grant that. Secondly, in verse 8, he says, do not promote his evil device, that they may not be exalted. In other words, don't exalt their plans. Don't exalt their plans, because if you allow their plans to come to pass, then wicked people are promoted in the land, right? Okay? And so don't allow those wicked plans, the plans of the wicked, to come to pass so that they wouldn't be exalted. I mean, when they get their way, when they do wickedness and they get their way, what happens? They want to be what? They want to be exalted. Okay? But if their wicked plans don't come to pass, what happens? They are abased, right? And I think it's safe to say that, and I've been saying this for decades, that God is bringing judgment down upon this nation. And one of the ways he does that is by removing the restraint of wickedness. In other words, it works something like this. God looks at his people and says, all right, you want to be wicked? I'll show you what it's like to live under wickedness. And then what happens? God's people say, oh no, right? And they turn back to the Lord with that. Okay, this is exactly what happened in the Old Testament. Israel served idols, right? So God gave them over to Babylon, a nation that served idols. And they had to serve those idols. As it were, they had to live their lives under those idols in Babylon. And so he prays. He says, now, Lord, don't grant their desires and don't allow their plans to come to pass, because it results in their promotion in the land. And this afternoon I went to a news website and I typed in Virginia. And anyway, we've been in the news. Did you know that? And let me just tell you what has happened in the state of Virginia, in the legislature, in the assembly, they call it, since January the 10th. It's not that long ago, right? Virginia legislature's in the process of killing the right to work law, which would force union dues upon workers. They have repealed certain Second Amendment guarantees concerning gun rights. They've banned guns from the state capitol and the surrounding area. They have rolled back abortion restrictions. They have been pushing for additional liberties in gambling. They have ratified the so-called ERA. and they are working on doubling the minimum wage, which I'm not opposed to people having a minimum wage, but that really impacts businesses, right? And folks, they've done all that since January the 10th. They got a long time left before the next election. And so you think about, all right, many of these plans, I think our sister mentioned this in the text, these aren't plans that just came up today. These are plans that have been planning for a while, right? And I'm not saying that if you agree with these policies that you're a wicked person. I'm just saying that the way that it's going about and the impact of this and restriction, talk of the restriction of religious liberties, and who knows what they're going to do with homosexual rights, so-called, right? All of these types of things. In fact, I left that one out. This was a couple of days ago. The assembly voted to allow homosexual people or people who change their gender to get a new birth certificate. So they can go down and get a new one. You know, if I decide I want to be a girl, I can go down and get my birth certificate issued with girl on it, you know, female on it. So all this is happening in since January the 10th. And so it is an appropriate thing, brethren, for us in praying against wickedness to pray that the Lord would not allow the desires of the wicked or the plans of the wicked to prosper, because that will result in their multiplication in the land, right? And you know, Proverbs says that when when righteousness reigns in the land, people rejoice. When wickedness reigns in the land, there's groans and grief and violence and these types of things, right? And so verse 8 gives us those two things to pray. Verses 9 and 10, as for the head of those who surround me, may the mischief of their lips cover them. May burning coals fall upon them. May they be cast into the fire, into deep pits from which they cannot raise. In other words, I sum this up in this way. David is asking that God's judgment would be executed upon them. They're using their lips to slander and to get their way. So the psalmist prays, may the mischief of their lips not bring down the people they're speaking against, but bring down who? Bring out them. And so this is exactly what the scripture over and over in the Psalms brings out, that if a wicked man lays a snare, in a lot of cases, the wicked person falls into the snare, not the one they set the trap for. And, you know, eventually, regardless of political parties or whatever, eventually everything that's been going on a federal or a state level that is wickedness is going to come back to bite them, right? They will fall into that snare. So we have three prayer requests. Don't grant the desires of the wicked. Don't grant their plans to be executed. And Lord, may your judgment be executed unto them. May what they plan for the righteous come upon them. And then in verse 11, may a slanderer not be established in the earth. May evil hunt the violent man speedily. And I have two things down here. First of all, do not establish the slanderer or the slander in the earth. Folks, I'll just pause here, and I think I can ask this question, and it will explain it. How many times do people take slander as being the truth? Mm-hmm. Right? That's what David's praying doesn't happen. He's praying that whatever they're saying isn't established in the earth, so that people will take it as the what? As the truth. Don't allow that to happen. And then lastly, may evil hunt the violent man speedily. What I have down is, Lord, don't delay their own schemes to come upon their own heads. Okay, so previously he's saying don't exalt their plans so that it comes to pass. Here he's saying if they do plan these things, Lord, don't delay the fact that if they lay a snare, may they fall in the snare. If they slander, may slander come back upon them. And folks, when we're praying against wicked people like this, these settled wicked people, those are wonderful things to pray against them. Amen? You don't really have to know a lot of specifics. You can just pray in these categories. You can pray this for our state government. You can pray this for federal government, right? You could pray this at the job place if you're under persecution. You could pray this if you got a neighbor that's out to get you. Okay? And that's the beautiful thing I love about the Psalms, is the details often we don't even know. But we know what we are to pray. Right? Lord can work out the details, can't he? Okay. And so we have these prayer requests. Now, there's also prayer requests for the believer, the one being persecuted. And you'll see, look at verse 1. Tell me what's the very first prayer request you see. Rescue me. Everybody see that? Rescue me. Rescue me from what? Well, rescue me from evil men and their slander and their snares and their nets that they are laying out for my feet, trying to catch me. Right? And then in verse 1, preserve me from violent men. Sometimes the evil does hurt us, doesn't it? And we need to be preserved. We need to be strengthened in our inner man to be able to stand in the midst of that. Secondly, I have down here in verse 4. What's the prayer request that hits you right off the bat in verse 4? Keep me. In other words, guard me. Guard my life, O Lord. Guard me from the hands of the wicked. Preserve me from violent men. And of course, you see violent men in verse 1. You see violent men in verse 4. And then he tells you how the violent men are purposing, what their aim is. They want to trip up my feet, and they're hiding traps, and they're laying cords out, and they're spreading a net and snares. Okay, all that is violent, isn't it? They're definitely not resting in the Lord. So, first of all, for a believer, I wrote, rescue and preserve me. Secondly, I have guard and preserve me. And then in verse 6, what is the psalmist looking for? Yeah, he wants the Lord to hear him, right? Where is the psalmist going for help? He's going to the Lord, isn't he? Okay? And so he says, now, Lord, you're my God. You're a God who hears and answers prayer. So, Lord, hear my voice of my supplications, because you are the strength of my salvation. You're the one who puts a hedge around me in the day of battle. And so I have down, first of all, for the believer to rescue and preserve. Secondly, to guard and preserve. Thirdly, to look to the Lord who hears and strengthens. To look to the Lord who hears and strengthens. And everything that we just looked at, all these prayer requests, and there's quite a few, isn't there, for just a psalm with 13 verses in it. All that's going on here is based upon verses 12 and 13. David is assured of some things about the Lord. Look at verse 12. I know. Everybody see that? I know that the Lord will maintain the cause of who? The afflicted. And what for the poor? Justice for the poor. Surely the righteous will give thanks to your name, and the upright will dwell in your presence. In other words, ultimately, will we be delivered? Ultimately, we are delivered. And folks, all of this, there's a lot of commentators and even liberal commentators who say, well, you know, this is just the mean old God of the Old Testament. Okay. Now I want to remind you of something. The mean old God of the Old Testament is the Jesus of the New Testament. Mm-hmm. Right? But folks, the reason why they say that is for two reasons, I think. Number one, they're not really suffering. You ask someone in the Holocaust concentration camp whether or not they wanted God to do something to their captors. What do you think?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. The second thing is that they don't understand justice. They don't understand justice at all. In other words, we think justice something like this. We'll say, let's say someone murdered my wife. Okay. And if I go up and I say to the murderer, well, I just want you to know I forgive you. Everybody says, wow, what a Christian. Okay, now hear me carefully. That's not justice. Justice runs something like this, and you'll get the parallel. I'm going to take your penalty so that justice can be executed. In other words, it's not loving for justice not to be executed. Right? It's loving to execute the justice. If they lay a snare, what are they to fall in? They lay a net, what are they to fall in? If they slander me, what's going to come back on them? Right? Is that justice? That is justice, isn't it? And folks, because of that, God does and is severe to wicked people. And that is just, isn't it? What is the penalty for wickedness? It's death, isn't it? And God, who executed justice, sent his son so that wicked people could be born again and not have to die, right? Okay, but did he just say, oh, you're just off scot-free? No, because then justice wouldn't have been accomplished, right? He wouldn't have been a just God to do that. But what did he do?
Paid the penalty.
He took the penalty. He died, did he not? He suffered the wrath against the crimes, not that he committed, but that we what? We committed. Everybody see that? Lost people do not understand justice at all. In the long term, brethren, justice always has to be paid. There's a debt when we commit injustice to someone, and it has to be paid. You can look at it like this way. Folks, every sin that you commit had to be paid for. It's not just that God forgives you and you get to go off scot-free. God does forgive us, but he knew that sin, and who paid for it? Jesus Christ paid for that ugly sin that we commit. It had to be paid for, yes? And thank God that when he paid for it, he paid for my past ones and my present ones and my future ones. So that I might stand before him with gratitude for his love. God did so love the world, didn't he? That he sent his only begotten Son.